This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
One of the powerful ways to adapt to climate change is to improve the early warning services. And that many African countries have a national adaptation plan.
That's WMO Secretary General Patere Talas on the need for countries to have adaptation plans to deal with climate change. Details coming up also. Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo says financial compensation is long overdue for slavery. And Nigeria's labor unions have begun an indefinite strike. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Journalists and medical staff at Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital say Israeli Defense Forces have control of the facility's buildings. Israel says it has sent in translators and specially trained medical workers and that it does not intend to harm civilians. The Israeli government says Hamas militants operate from locations in the complex, including tunnels around the area. Hospital staff and Hamas deny the allegation. Also today, Thomas White, the Gaza chief of the UN Relief Agency for Palestinian Refugees, confirmed it has received 23,000 liters of fuel that crossed into Gaza from Egypt. On social media, however, White said that was just 9% of what is needed and that Israel limited its use to fueling trucks bringing aid into Gaza. He said it cannot be used for power, for water plants, or electricity in hospitals. Israel has allowed only limited supplies of food, fuel, and medical supplies into Gaza since Hamas militants attacked Israel on October the 7th. More than 1,200 people were killed in the attack, and Hamas took more than 240 hostages back to Gaza. Since then, more than the Hamas-run government health ministry has said, nearly 12,000 Gaza residents have been killed as Israel has bombarded the enclave and locked its ground incursion. Earlier today, in speaking with reporter Linda Grandstein in Jerusalem, I started out by asking her about Israeli forces' search of the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza.
Well, the Israeli army says that they did find weapons in the medical center. They found all these machine guns, which they say, you know, proves that Hamas did use it. They did not find any hostages. I think they were sort of hoping that there were hostages being held underneath the hospital. Another thing is that the former head of USAID, the Agency of International Development in Gaza, said just a few minutes ago on X, writing in a thread, that it was well known that Hamas terrorists used Shifa Hospital as a command center and used ambulances to travel. Israel is concerned about the humanitarian issue. It actually brought incubators with the soldiers to evacuate the premature babies. But, of course, Hamas says that a lot of civilians have been killed in the Israeli assault on the hospital. Israel has, waited to go into the hospital knowing that it was going to cause, problems both in terms of civilians and in terms of international public opinion.
And the Israeli army says it will temporarily suspend military activities as it reopens an evacuation passage for Gaza residents. What is the status of aid shipments into Gaza from Egypt's Rafah crossing? Are more trucks getting in?
Yes, Israel says more trucks are getting in. The way the trucks, what happens, by the way, is they come to Rafah, and then they're brought into Israel where they're inspected. Then they go back to the Rafah crossing, and they come into Gaza through that Rafah crossing. Israel has said it will not allow aid to come directly from Israel, but, of course, it wants to inspect all of the aid. That said, it seems that in the last few days, there has been more food and medicine getting in. Today, for the first time, Israel allowed fuel into Gaza. And that's something, as you said in the introduction, and the reason that a lot of the hospitals had shut down is they said that they didn't have fuel to run the hospitals. So I think, you know, Israel says that its fight is not with the civilians of Gaza, it's with Hamas. And Israeli officials say that they are, tightening their control over Gaza and has called on Hamas to surrender.
Any movement on the hostage front?
Well, in fact, yes. There supposedly is a deal that Qatar is trying to arrange in which 50 of the hostages, mostly women and children, would be released in exchange for a 3-day ceasefire, and the reports, at least coming from Israel, is that those negotiations are making quite a bit of progress. By the way, there's one woman who supposedly, if she's still alive, gave birth in captivity in Gaza.
And lastly, Linda, U.S. public support, according to some polls and some reports, U.S. public support for Israel's war against Hamas militants in Gaza is eroding. And most Americans think Israel should call a ceasefire to a conflict that has ballooned into a humanitarian crisis.
Yes, that's true. But I think Israel is more concerned about what President Biden says and less about American public opinion. Now, obviously, American public opinion can influence President Biden. But yesterday, the president said that they believe, Israel's contention that Hamas was using hospitals as weapon centers and basically using the people in those hospitals as human shields. So until you start getting pressure from, the United States to call for a ceasefire, and there's been definitely a change where in the first weeks after the, October 7th, when Hamas killed all of those, Israeli civilians, there was a lot of sympathy from President Biden came here, if you remember. And now, there are warnings from Secretary Blinken, who said too many civilians have died, and President Biden urging Israel to be careful. Israel's foreign minister, who was in Geneva yesterday, speaking to, officials, said that he believes Israel has 2 to 3 weeks before the international pressure will become very, very large. So Israel wants to sort of finish the military part of this afterwards. However, what happens after that, let's say that Israel succeeds in its goal of getting rid of Hamas, who is going to take control of Gaza? That nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Reporter Linda Grandstein actually updating us with the latest from the region. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
At an international conference on slavery reparations, Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo said yesterday that financial compensation is long overdue to Africans and the diaspora. At the 4-day conference in Accra on how to address historical injustices, Akufo-Addo said no amount of money can restore the damage caused by the transatlantic slave trade. But surely, this is a matter that the world must confront and can no longer ignore. Reuters says the event is expected to produce an African-led action plan to push for reparatory justice, establish an African committee of experts to oversee the plan's implementation, and boost collaboration with the broader diaspora. Advocates have long called for paying reparations or making other amends for slavery. The movement has recently gained momentum worldwide. Nigeria's labor unions have begun an indefinite strike to protest the beating of Nigerian Labor Congress President Joe Ajaero, allegedly by security agents earlier this month. The labor leader was attending an official function when he was picked up by authorities. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
For a second day Wednesday, the nationwide strike called by the Nigerian Labour Congress, NLC, and the Trade Union Congress, TUC, held firm. Compliance is stricter in the capital, Abuja, the operational nerve center of the workers' unions. The strike is in response to the beating of the NLC president, Joe Ajaero, on November the 1st in southeastern Imo State, where he was to lead workers in protest over unpaid salaries. The NLC said Ajaero was picked up in the regional office the morning of the protest day by armed policemen and beaten mercilessly. Police have denied beating the NLC president. Police said agents only took Ajaero into protective custody to save him from an angry mob. Benson Upa is the spokesperson of the Nigerian Labour Congress. He says the NLC president is still recovering from the incident.
He was in a bad shape. He had lost his bearing, his right eye was short and puffed, and all of that. Now recognition was poor. Up to this moment, there has been no condemnation of what happened. No one has been arrested, let alone prosecuted for this heinous crime. It is about the right of every citizen to freedom and the right of every citizen to justice. The issues that led the movement of NLC and TVC people to Imo, those issues have not been addressed.
But Ajaero's beating is not the only reason for the strike. The unions also blame authorities for failing to honor agreements made to cushion the cost of living crisis triggered by government's economic reforms introduced in May. Earlier this year, President Bola Tinubu scrapped expensive fuel subsidies and floated the Nigerian currency in a bid to unify a multiple exchange rate system. But the decision has hurt the economy and millions of citizens. In August, workers staged nationwide street protests against the reforms and in September embarked on a two-day warning strike. Authorities promised to respond. Last Friday, the National Industrial Court of Nigeria ordered the workers' unions to not go on another strike. Eze Onyekbere is the executive director of a pro-union NGO, the Center for Social Justice.
The regime came on board and removed the subsidy and limited the naira, which has need to significantly get the minimum wage, like every less than $30, and things the government was supposed to do to reduce the hardship of the language they didn't do. So for people like me, this strike, it's all but good.
On Monday, the presidency criticized the strike, calling it unwarranted, and said authorities have launched a probe into the attack of the union leader. Onyekbere says the government must not make empty promises or there will be consequences.
We are going to deteriorate a state where any riffraff, simply because he's in power, will simply be beating up anybody. The day the Nigeria depends to that level and workers don't speak out or workers don't show their strength, then Nigeria is going to the dogs.
The unions say authorities must prosecute those who beat Ajaero, offer an apology, and take steps to improve the welfare of workers and citizens. Without those measures, they say the strike will continue. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Meteorological Organization warns efforts to stem climate change are at risk of falling off the rails as greenhouse gas emissions reach record highs. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
With the effects of climate change increasingly being felt, the World Meteorological Organization says global concentrations of carbon dioxide, the most important greenhouse gas, last year were 50% above the pre-industrial era for the first time. The UN agency says emissions of two other greenhouse gases, methane and nitrous oxide, also saw the highest increase on record from 2021 to 2022. Climate scientists say the rising levels of greenhouse gases are warming the planet and rapidly causing changes in global weather. WMO Secretary General Petteri Talas on Wednesday said new emissions of these potent greenhouse gases have continued to grow in 2023 because industrial activities are rising.
And out of those most important gases, carbon dioxide, it has contributed about two-thirds of the warming potential. And why carbon dioxide is so important, its lifetime is up to thousands of years. So it takes thousands of years to remove carbon from the system once it's emitted to the atmosphere.
Talas says that despite decades of warnings from the scientific community, the world is heading in the wrong direction. He says global temperatures are expected to increase by 2.5 to 3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. This, he says, is well above the Paris Agreement goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. He says the whole planet has seen an increase in heat waves. About half of the planet is facing an increase of flooding and a one-third increase in drought. He notes some countries in Africa have been hit with both droughts and floods on an epic scale. He says Africa will have to emphasize climate adaptation to mitigate the impact of climate change.
And from our side, one of the powerful ways to adapt to climate change is to improve the early warning services. And that many African countries have national adaptation plans. And for example, in countries like Ethiopia and Kenya, they have started using irrigation to boost their agriculture. And that's one way to adapt to climate change.
The WMO chief says more emphasis will be placed on climate adaptation when delegates meet for International Climate Summit, COP28, at the end of the month in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. He says developing countries would like half of the climate financing to be used to help them pay for early warning systems and climate adaptation projects. A new report by the UN Environment Program estimates the cost of adaptation for developing countries to be between $215 to $387 billion a year this decade. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ballot counting is underway in Liberia after yesterday's runoff election between President George Weah and former Vice President Joseph Boakai in what was expected to be a closely fought vote. Turnout appeared lighter than during the first round of voting, which had a turnout of 79% of around 2.4 million registered voters. Reporter Denise Nimpson in Monrovia spoke to me earlier today about where things stand.
Counting is on the way in the 15 counties of Liberia as of the election that was held on yesterday across Monrovia. So the counting process is on the way. Currently, Liberians are waiting for the National Elections Commission to start announcing preliminary results as it relates to their votes that were cast on yesterday.
And Denise, you told me yesterday that turnout appeared lighter in Monrovia, the capital, compared with the first round of voting.
The turnout was low, yes, like I said, and it's not only in Monrovia, but across the country. It was noticed that, observed that the turnout has been low during the voting process because most of the people in the election, it was the general election. So you realize that now that you have the runoff election, that is just a presidential runoff election, without members of the legislature being part of it, that also could contribute to the low turnout. Another factor could be that Liberians are a bit tired, perhaps, of the process, so they decide to sit back and just watch the process. So many were not encouraged any longer to go to the polls to elect whosoever should serve as the president for the next 6 years.
Yes, and you know, the first round of the election, we saw a record turnout of 79% of around 2.4 million registered voters. Have any of the candidates talked during this period of the runoff? Has anyone claimed any victory?
Yes, the supporters of both candidates currently on the social media, both candidates, their supporters are claiming early victory. According to them, they have their war rooms that they are looking out. They are having their talent process, and they are winning. So both sides are claiming victory that they have won the election. And currently, you have a supporter of the Unity Party, one of the representative-elect who is Representative Yeke Koluba. So they took to the street to claim early victory with supporters of Unity Party by raiding the streets, celebrating that they have won the election. And also the ruling establishment, the incumbent, his supporters as well, are on the social media like the Unity Party, claiming that they have won the election, and they are all just waiting for the final official pronouncement from the National Elections Commission as it relates to their side of winning the election.
And Denise, this vote, this runoff, in many ways is a test of Weah's popularity. He has, as you know, a cult-like support in many areas, inspired by his rise from a Monrovia slum to international soccer stardom. And then Boakai, who lost to Weah in the 2017 election, has campaigned on the need to rescue the nation from what he calls mismanagement by Weah's administration.
Sure, all of these factors are very significant to the process because Weah being a soccer legend that has contributed to him becoming the president. Notwithstanding, despite the 6 year with criticism from the opposition that there's hardship across the country due to his administration, the popularity that he has from the soccer field that has landed him the presidency is still with some of his supporters. And also Ambassador Boakai, as the former vice president who has served over 40 years in government, from director, managing director, to agriculture minister in the 70s, 80s, and during the Manasseh Leaf administration, that also has given him some leverage in terms of support from Liberians who see him as a seasoned politician.
That was our reporter, Denise Nimpson, in Monrovia. The United Nations is calling for an independent investigation into mass killings in Burkina Faso this month that authorities said left more than 70 people dead, including children. According to the French news agency AFP, a spokeswoman for the UN Human Rights Office said it is continuing to look into what happened, but it, at this stage, unable to identify the perpetrators. It's urging the country to carry out promptly a thorough, independent, and transparent investigation. The Associated Press says the European Union estimates nearly 100 people were killed last week in the village of Zaongo. Burkina Faso has been grappling for years with an extremist insurgency linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. Thousands of people have been killed and more than 2 million internally displaced in the West African nation. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. What Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.